today I've got the pleasure of being joined by John Spindler, who is joining us at the AI for Business Summit on the 28th of September. So, John, you know, I'm really keen on how technology is going to change business and how startups are coming along. So that's why I really am keen to speak with you. Could you do a brief introduction to yourself first, please, your background and the fund you're currently running?
Okay. Yes, I'm happy to do, Andrew. I'm John Spindler. I'm presently the founding partner of a little fund called TwinPath, which invests in AI-first startups in the UK. Previous to that, I was the CEO of Capital Enterprise for almost 13 years. And that is a not-for-profit that funds and supports accelerators, runs them themselves, actually, but supports startups to go from the idea to MVP to market stage. And whilst I was there, I also ran another two funds, London Co-Investment Fund and AI Seed. I've been an active angel since 2012 in the space, particularly the last two, 3 years in AI. I think it's 76 investments now in AI first companies. So kind of done a lot. Back in the day, I was an entrepreneur. Basically, I had a small success a small failure as well. So kind of, if we ever get round to that, I can talk about my experience in my 30s and 40s as an entrepreneur as well.
Great. So you've got, you know, you said 70 plus 76 sort of AI type investments going back a number of years. So you've seen changes over that time. What will be your little reflection back of how AI has changed and where it's got to now?
Well, my first AI investment was in 2015 in a company that had a rules-based heuristic, algorithm they were building a product around. And in those days, we had just had a couple of years prior to that, the emergence of deep learning, particularly the convoluted neural networks, basically in image classification in particular, that had exploded with the work of people like Jeffrey Hinton in 2012. In 2015, that hadn't really percolated down yet into lots of early stage startups. By 2016, 2017, we started to see quite a few. And one of the reasons I had a general fund at the time, we were funding alongside other angels and other seed stage VCs, people like Albion and people like Seedcamp and people and angel groups like London Business Angels. And we were finding then that it was very difficult to get them to invest in AI startups. And I remember speaking to a very well-known angel who was much more successful than I ever will be as an angel. I remember speaking to him at his London flat in Belgravia to give him a sense of how successful he was as an angel investor. Taking me to the side and saying to me, John, why are you wanting to do this small little fund in AI, kind of especially trying to convince angels like me to participate? Because don't you understand that no one understands AI and no investor wants to invest in something they don't really understand? And secondly, if you invest in something you don't understand, when you speak about that to your friends and companions and your peers, they ask you, so what do you know about AI? And you go back to step one, and therefore you look like a fool. And that no angel investor wants to part with his money and things, it makes him look like a fool to his peers. And then they're really, really bright, but know this space, know that AI is really, really hard. And it's going to take about a year to 2 years for these kind of companies to actually build a product that works in field that can actually generate value. Mm-hmm. So who wants to do that at seed? It's better to wait to A or B. And invest alongside those. So, you know, so that was why we set up AI Seed, and we're doing very well out of that, because no one really wants to do AI, or they want to do very light AI where the secret sauce wasn't in the AI or the model. The secret sauce was in their ability to get to market really quickly and sell. I think what we've come on since then is that people are starting to realize now that AI is kind of table stakes to new software products. It is different. They do take time. They cost a lot more money. They're much more unpredictable. kind of the go-to-market strategy normally basically has to wait until the product works. Although you can do the American style of, as Reid Hoffman says, of throwing yourself out the airplane, trying to build the parachute as you fall. But in AI, because it's so complex and difficult to get it to work, the likelihood is you're going to burn through all your early stage customers.
Right.
That might work really well in the States, where the market size is so vast, when you can burn through 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 customers who have a product that doesn't work.
Right.
A product that you promise it would work, it now doesn't work. But in a market like UK, if you burn through 10, 20, you don't seem to have many other people left to go to.
Right. Okay. That's an interesting perspective on
that. So, this is the truth. For all my time when I was doing AI, I was sitting next to other VCs saying, oh, it's a commodity. It'll be a commodity. And still today, it's not a commodity. Even when you've got the power of the large language models and trying to get them to work in enterprise, people are starting to realize it's not as simple and easy as people thought. So I think kind of that's why we went to AI in 2017 and started to do. We did 45 investments in AI seed. And then I started to do AI again as an angel from 2020, because when AI seed stopped, till last March. And I wrote my last angel check. Because now I need to put all my money into my fund. And TwinPath has launched in June to, again, back AI companies. Slightly different now than when we were doing them back in 2017. Right. But still some of the same challenges.
So what's your hypothesis now then? If you're now on this brink with TwinPath, what's your hypothesis and approach in that at the moment?
I suppose there's different kind of environments. One is everyone is now much more in enterprise, in with customer groups. They're much more interested in AI. I think there is still a hype. And I think people ask me all the time, as I was speaking to a journalist this week, said, where is the hype? And I said, the hype actually still is between what people say they want and adoption. There's still a lot in enterprise. So I wanted to use AI, but actually, if you look at the money they're spending, it's not much. And that's partly because we have this kind of paradox. We have this big revolution, which will come on to a moment, but large language models have generated at a time of basically tightening belts where people are trying to spend less money.
Yeah.
And CFOs in particular like spending less money in these times.
Yeah.
To maintain their cash flow and maintain their profits. And therefore, investment is not as high as you expect. The hype is much greater. You know, kind of there's been some analysis of what CEOs are saying in their annual reports and actually what their companies are actually spending. There's a massive big gap there.
Right. Okay.
And so actually, adoption in market, although interest is high, the adoption cycle is still relatively kind of slow. In this area,
would you also take that? I'm feeling also there's a bit of rabbits in the headlights, or they're not quite sure what AI is going to do for their business yet. Or back to your earlier point about maybe it's more complex than initially thought. So there's some hesitation there from corporates. I take all your points on tightening belts and that now, but do you think there's also a rabbits in the headlight in there?
There is, in a sense, you have this superpower, but it means you have to change. And one of the kind of big changes is whether you want to go making decisions based on models or heuristics. Because the key power of a large language models, these things like GPT 3.5, GPT 4, Bard, Anthropic, Claude, etc., is that they allow you to model things much more easy.
And get to
that. But a lot of people make decisions on rules of thumb, heuristics. It worked last year for me, it'll work this year.
Right.
Yeah. And what we're asking is do you want to basically go towards model thinking? Do you want to basically build models now that ways it allow you to basically take multivariables and determine and give you a deterministic pathway to achieve X or Y? Or are you still very kind of comfortable in making decisions based on kind of instinctive rules of thumb that basically did okay in the past?
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective, actually, John, because I'm using now GPT in a number of my business ventures and looking at my investments and sort of stuff like that. And actually, I had an example this morning. I put some material in relating to a project I'm working on. And the angle that Claude AI was I was using, because I was able to drop a document and that in, the angle it came back with was quite different than the perspective or model that I had worked on. But, you know, I thought, oh, God, that's an interesting angle. I'm going to change the way I'm going to, you know,
work. Yeah, even if we're talking at two variable model, actually, this is my rule of thumb, and you put it into Claude and you get a other, basically, opinion. Together, you will blend those, I suspect, and you will come up with something new. And that kind of changes it again from, I just make a very quick decision on what I did before to actually, it's not a complex model, but it's still a model.
Yes,
this is how I think the future will work. And so I think that is a kind of thing that we're all going to have to get used to. And we're at the start, because the real kind of things that are going to emerge is how are we going to use them? And are we going to go to a world, which I think we've backed a couple of companies doing this. And so we're thinking it probably will, although we've backed also three other companies that are not doing that. So obviously riding multiple horses. Who are going to build what are presently called very clumsily LLLAs, which are large language models, augmented autonomous agents. So these are the co-pilots that are going to work behind you to generate basically kind of models, data, predictions, prescriptions, and decisions.
And I
think whether they're therefore then doing that in a generative way to generate, say, code, or generate novels, or generate plans, or kind of etc., or they're doing it in a more analytical way, their issues is that these co-pilots are in potentially going to give every human, basically individually and within organizations, a superpower.
Which means
that they'll be able to outcompete other humans that don't use them. And therefore, if that's the future world, which I think possibly is going to be, then this is a super exciting time.
I'm reading Mustafa Suleiman's book, which was published in that last week, and he talks about their, I think it's ACI, he talks about where when you've got the AI that can come up with a business idea, create the materials and that for it, itself start the interactions with the platform to be able to do drop shipping or sort of something like that, that can automate all of that sort of process, is his like Turing model of when AI is going to be able to run businesses.
It's very interesting. I mean, last night I was at an event organized by a VC called Lakestar, where I end up meeting kind of a Oxford professor in NLP and Turing fellow. One of the founders of a company called Conjecture that are trying to build these large language models with large degrees of guardrails and safety elements into them. And we end up talking about the philosophy of whether, you know, artificial general intelligence is an emerging property that will emerge from these highly probabilistic kind of token basic predicting models or not. And if it does, then Mustafa Suleiman's kind of view that you will end up having basically kind of agency in these models that will come up with their own ideas, et cetera, is quite frightening. I mean, I personally, from a very low base, and also though, therefore, reading around the subject and have no real insight, agree with the Oxford Don I was speaking to. I don't see it happening. But people like Conjecture are convinced it will happen, and others within people like OpenAI and Google, et cetera, are also thinking that it will happen in 3 to 4 to 5 years. Right. So there is this kind of big, you end up talking about philosophy, because none of us have evidence either way that that will be the case.
Okay, yeah, but we do have entrepreneurs and people who are investing and thinking about doing this sort of stuff. And I suppose that I draw a little parallel, and I've been through the dot-com age, and I reflect back looking at the late 90s and then sort of looking back with hindsight and saying, well, what Jeff Bezos did with taking www. And starting to sell books online transformed retail. And I'm reflecting that forward now and thinking, if I take these different forms of AI, could I do the thing that we just...
Well, there's interest. I mean, it comes back to trend path. I mean, we're now getting into a situation where I think we're looking at to divide the opportunity as an investor into three buckets.
Okay.
One, actually, I thought I would do a lot more, and we find it very difficult, actually, to find kind of startups in. So if you take the kind of view that, yes, large language models are a revolution, yes, basically, it's going to, massively impact, and also other AI as well. I mean, computer vision kind of elements, diffusion models, causal AI, kind of all of these things are still going on and having big impacts as well. And we'll have also their kind of, but large language models are obviously the big event, the big gold rush, the big thing that will basically disrupt and require all of us to kind of think about, as you say, as the internet emerged in Web 1.0, how do we basically adapt or how do we develop for? Kind of we're into this stage where we think there's three, I hate the word buckets, kind of pillars of trying to kind of frames to try and kind of get our heads around where opportunities are and where what we should be looking to invest at this very early stage. So one is very much applied. One of those is basically, again, looking fundamentally at the problem, basic for the customer group, and to kind of see if there's actually existing proven AI that can be adapted and to basically to solve problem X and Y. And we've invested in these companies already. Our first company that to go public on our investment, a company called Treefarer, is very much addressing this from a practical point of view, using multimodal data, satellite data, LiDAR data, kind of text to basically allow a better forestry management and to allow that forestry management also to get sufficient quality data so that they can be used for carbon credits.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's a great team put together. There's a big problem. They've identified the problem. They've got loads of customers to start off with. Kind of like, and the AI element is basically, it's difficult. It hasn't been done before in their way, but actually we're not kind of breaking the limits of science here.
Taking
basic combination of off-the-shelf models, some proprietary integration, etc., and a lot of talent to do something basically, which is kind of first, but not a radical first.
I like that idea. Yeah,
because a lot of applied.
At the AI Business Summit, we've got Andy Bruce from SoftTools, who's going to be talking about an application which is taking data from Coca-Cola's value chain and using AI to clean the data, using AI to be able to present stuff back with large language models. And I believe as well, like you, that this first group is going to be about, let's solve some problems with some stuff that's relatively well proven, so that we can start engaging businesses and individuals to start seeing the power of it. Which, again, like Jeff Bezos, it was like putting a few books online to start with was not rocket science.
And it's good, and it's not easy. It's still a lot harder than classic rules-based software where you write it once and then just adapt it. But just means to get rid of the bugs, etc., as you go along. But you're right, and we've just done a second investment which went yesterday on a very similar applied, and that one is more embedded with large language models. But again, it starts off with the basic premise of these are two domain experts in their field, finding a problem that wasn't being properly solved that can now be solved by combining different in this case, of large language models with basic different other elements of small language models to basically generate a solution and they start off with clients. So when we look at applied AI, we're looking at companies that develop something in market with clients in focus and have pilots, and we're trying to kind of invest in them to take their first one or two pilots forward. And again, we're kind of probably going to do our next investment in that field as well. And then we've got on the other extreme, where you're doing things which are basically being written on papers that came out in the last 6 months, 9 months, a year. kind of like where they're much more frontier tech, where you're thinking, well, this can't be done. This couldn't be done a year ago. We didn't know how to do this 6 months ago. Kind of like, and we're getting teams coming out of universities, teams leaving, but other well-known basically startups and, you know, in this field and, you know, kind of and spinning off on themselves on by their own to solve these problems because the papers are suggesting it can be potentially done now. And in one of these cases, it was the paper's authors. In another case, it wasn't the paper's authors, but the team of two entrepreneurs that came from another AI startup managed to contact the authors and got them to basically join them. So it's always a good litmus test, actually, if you're doing frontier, but the paper authors also want to join you. So you can see in the frontier, you can see the applied. What we haven't got, which is the assumption we thought we would have, and this may just be timing. So 3-6 months time, I may be corrected, but we are looking. We all know that it's cliche, isn't it? You know, in a gold rush, you basically, you know, you make money by selling the picks and shovels. You know, the kind of the tooling, the things that enable others to build X or to kind of prospect for gold here.
Organizations have made money in that space, yeah.
But we're finding it very difficult for startups to get into that space. And that is, I think, actually, I know it's because the big boys keep producing these tools and giving them away for free.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of slightly frustrating. Is it suddenly, you know, kind of Amazon or Google or OpenAI basically produce a tool that enables you to build, say, an embedded, vector embedded database or kind of, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they give away free and startups you're really interested in because they, you know, suddenly, you know, are kind of in the problem that they're competing against a freebie.
Yes.
And I think that basically is, makes the, you know, a difference in the sense that we're going to have maybe the tooling elements either going to be given away free by big boys or all going to be open sourced. Yeah. And that will be a different kind of thing from the Web 2.0, where lots of people made lots of decent money, especially SaaS plays, building kind of platforms and tooling that enabled you to, you know, kind of, you know, build great websites, you know, analyze data from your kind of customers, et cetera, et cetera.
But I think some of those areas, I think for me, the ones who are helping with the picks and the shovels at the moment, to me, are in your applied space. Maybe there's that overlap and that with your.
Well, there could be a little bit, but what do I need to do to be able to use a large language model to do X? Like that tooling element is increasingly being given away free by the large language models providers,
right?
For it's a feature on their platforms as opposed to a separate business.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been having this. I think I've been having similar sort of thoughts and that to you in this sort of space and that. But I come back to my Jeff Bezos sort of type example, in that, never mind if Netscape gave away how to build your website, companies still didn't change. It still took somebody to string together that applied solution to do it. So I'm still
this is interesting as well. The conversation I had this morning with a startup, I got a very good agency doing very successful, and they built a product on a large language model, and they're thinking on the classic software approach is you build it, you package it up, and you then sell it, and you know, in hundreds of thousands. Obviously, you know, there's still the basis of that is not your technology. It's someone else's. And we've all been told it's very kind of dangerous to be so platform dependent on someone else's technology if you build around it. But really, we end up in this debate whether actually the real solution is to kind of really superpower their own agency. allow them to basically reduce the cost of delivering their agency solution, but still have, as you say, the human factor at the beginning and the human factor at the end to basically get it either adopted and then to help integrate it and help evaluate it and help basically kind of, and actually there is an argument that actually rather than disintermediating kind of consultants and middlemen, et cetera, large language models will just superpower them.
Yeah. And I suppose back to, I suppose one of my experiences in my early career and was around SAP's implementation, SAP as an ERP system, for example, which was meant to be able to sort of solve business process and data and that within companies. But the interesting thing with that platform that SAP created was they made sure that consultants were the ones who were doing the delivery and sort of stuff like that. So I think there's...
Definitely said people feeling like professional services. I was at COGX this week and I was surprised at how many doomsters are on stage saying how terrible it will all be. Kind of like, you know, at a tech event, which I thought was interesting and slightly depressing in the sense you would expect at least at a tech event, you would have much more enthusiasm for the future and less fear. And most of those were basically by the commentariat and consultants. Seem to be feeling that this threatens their own jobs. I suspect it won't. I suspect it'll kind of basically, I suspect the lawyers will still be there, or the consultants will be there, the accountants will be there, the CFOs will be there. They will just be superpowered by basically these AI tools and these AI platforms to be able to do their job quicker and better. And it'll be those that adapt it into their kind of delivery process that will basically have the speed and cost advantage to really take them on.
And I think out of some of those ones, some who can really apply it well could end up being the leaders in these sectors, and some of them will be laggards. You know, it's like
as it always is the case. I think. I mean, kind of like you know, on that, it probably may do. I think they'll probably definitely allow some companies to grow faster and become larger. And it may get rid of a lot of the localized versions of companies. I will do what someone else does in the big city, but I'll do it in my little town. I'll serve basically just my own catchment area. And I think that has some problems for society, actually, but leave that aside. You know, so I'm not a doomster like that. I feel like you agree with you, Andrew. These could, you know, this will percolate, take years and years to fully adopt, but there is big advantages to people that adopt early, I think.
John, it's been fascinating talking with you, and we're really looking forward to the in-person AI Business Summit, because I think where we've got to now in our conversation, we can continue there with the other participants, the startups and that, to discuss how AI is going to impact investment.
And I'll finish on this, as we finished last night with this discussion we had at the Late Star event. Quite frankly, I'm not sure. Kind of like, you know, I'm not 100% sure that basically how this will be, but I'm keen to dive in and to kind of be there and be a participant. And I hope people at your conference are as well.
Great. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Andrew.
Do please give a 5-star like and subscribe to future interviews.